Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the lawyers when we come back. Here from the International Forecaster are some current events. Maybe you hadn't heard this, or maybe you had, but listen to this. Our spies tell us, now this is Bob Chapman speaking, he says, our spies tell us that when Israeli Dolphin submarines took on ordnance at Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean, an American naval base, their missiles were outfitted with nuclear warheads, courtesy of the U.S. and United Kingdom governments. Nuclear warheads. Israeli submarines. Iran. Pat Buchanan said on the McLaughlin Group the other night that he expected an attack on Iran in September, just 2 months before the election. The Independent of the United Kingdom says that Donald Rumsfeld has made a killing out of bird flu. Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense in the United States, made over $5 million in capital gains in selling shares in Gilead Sciences. He was on their board of directors from 1988 to 2001, and he was chairman from 1997. Gilead developed the Tamiflu, the drug that our government bought in massive amounts and by other governments to treat a possible human pandemic of the disease. 60 countries have ordered large stocks of the drug that does not kill the disease, but if taken soon after symptoms appear, it will reduce its severity. We reported Rumsfeld's sales in 2004. A 2005 report showed that Rumsfeld owned shares worth $95.9 million, from which he received an income of $13 million. Owned land worth $17 million, and made $1 million from renting it out. He had $8.1 million in illiquid investments. Now you know why we have a bird flu epidemic. Going to Iraq, the war and occupation in Iraq has cost American taxpayers $300 billion, money which we borrowed from foreigners. The ultimate cost for everything at this point is about $2 trillion. That's right, boys and girls. The war in Iraq now is $2 trillion. That's everything. That's for rebuilding, veterans care, and interest on that borrowed money, projected over the next 30 years. And our reports show that about 40,000 casualties and close to 9,000 of them dead, plus the deaths of over 100,000 Iraqi civilians. Iraq is essentially in ruins, and on top of all of this, Iraq is headed for civil war with our forces in the middle. There is no Iraqi security force, only fractionalized religious militias. The whole war and occupation and the terrorism is simply phony. Are Americans finally waking up to these facts? Well, we hope they are. In the United Arab Emirates, which includes Dubai, they said that they're looking to move one-tenth of their dollar reserves into euros, while the governor of the Saudi Arabian Central Bank condemned the United States' move as discrimination. Syria said two of its banks will buy euros for dollars. And the United Arab Emirates said that they would sell about $2.3 billion Last week, Syria made the switch, and the White House told U.S. financial institutions to terminate all correspondence accounts involving the Commercial Bank of Syria because of money laundering concerns. So, as we've told you, over and over again, if our government doesn't have a real charge, then they use the catch-all money laundering. Even when they have possible charges, they throw in money laundering just for good measure. Now, America, for all of its faults time after time, has incurred debt, and massive debt, to keep up a high style of living. But at the same time, it has been the locomotive that over and over again has carried the entire world's economy. David Dodge, the head of Canada's central bank, says the world risks outright recession. And Claude Trichet, who is the European Central Bank president, believes the world economy has to pay a price now for the U.S. trade deficit. This fiscal year, the United States will spend about $800 billion more than they earn from foreign countries. Presently, the deficit is mainly being financed by China, Japan, England, Caribbean financial central banks, and other Asian nations. Now, we spend and they lend. We spend money that we don't have, and they lend money to people who cannot repay. Obviously, this cannot go on indefinitely. Now, the FBI, after spying on Doug Thompson, who publishes Capitol Hill Blue, well, he received a request under the USA Patriot Act for its contributors, its personnel, and its readers. He was instructed not to reveal who had made the information request or what law had authorized it. So Thompson refused. He refused to supply the information under the Patriot Act, and he revealed the letter and its contents in Capitol Hill Blue. He published. So the U.S. attorney threatened Thompson with jail unless he not only removed the information from the website, but revised the article discussing it. So to avoid going to jail, Thompson complied. Now, this is truly an Orwellian police state. A publication was not only censored, but the publication was forced to submit new content which was acceptable to the government. Now you know why we have our transmission facilities in other countries. In violation of the First Amendment to our Constitution, the editor and the publisher was threatened with jail, not for anything that he did, but for something that he wrote. Now, in the government's eyes, that is called a thought crime, and Thompson was forced to violate his own Fourth Amendment rights, those of his contributors, and those of his readers. His crime was in telling Americans that he had been served for such information, and under what law he was being charged. This is what our phony war on terror has now brought us to. Capitol Hill Blue is a political site that has been functioning for 12 years, and it obviously is not a terrorist site. Now, the fiercest thing that you'll find there is harsh criticism of the Bush administration. It is obvious that our president has a blacklist of all of those who oppose their New World Order and their corporatist fascist government. They use the Patriot Act as a catch-all. It authorizes secret searches of website records, and it allows collection of bank, medical, credit card, and travel records. Then, there are warrantless wiretapping and sneak and peek searches of your home and your office. We call it breaking and entering. Then there is the secret no-fly list. Now, we are predicting there will come a time when everyone will be subjected to these laws. We're only a step away, and now it is the selected few. Tomorrow it will be everyone. This is how police states work. Not all at once, but by degrees. It's like a frog in a pot of water. When the water comes to a boil, it'll be too late for the frog. And yes, we're all on lists, like Doug Thompson and others who are truth seekers and purveyors. In a fascist state, truth is never allowed. We are at war with our own government. The enemy of the American people is your government. Now, the First Amendment and Fourth Amendments are dead, and you readers know how far this will go, all the way, if you allow it to. And as a start, with minor exception, clear Congress, throw almost all of them out of office, they betray us every day, and when the composition of Congress is changed, demand rescinding the USA Patriot Act and the impeachment of our president. Hey, let me give you a reminder here. You know, for years and years, patriots all over America have been saying, you know, what you need to do is to vote the bad guys out and vote the good guys in. Who in the hell are the bad guys? Do America's voters go to the polls and say, well, let's see, now, who is the bad guy? Because that's the guy I want to vote for. Don't America's voters, when they go into that voting booth, vote for the good guy? The good guy. In their view, it's the good guy that they're voting for, isn't it? Now, if America's voters are always voting for the good guys, and the bad guys are always selected, doesn't that tell you, then, that this democratic process doesn't work? Is there ever a time when we'll ever be able to connect the dots? Boys and girls, our founding fathers, you know those guys that signed the Declaration of Independence? Those 56 guys that signed that declaration? Not a single one of them had one good word for democracy. That's why they bypassed democracy and formed and created a republican form of government. Now, there isn't a one of you listening to me right now who can tell the difference between a republican form of government and a democracy. I'm not expecting you to do that. You've all been educated in public schools. But surely you've heard our president constantly tell you that we need to put democracy in Iraq. That America is a democracy. That we need democracy in Saudi Arabia. We need democracy in Iran. We need democracy in Afghanistan. Have you heard our president? Boys and girls, there wasn't anybody at the Constitutional Convention that was preaching democracy in 1787. There wasn't any democracy in this country until 1900. We weren't practicing democracy in the United States of America, not until the communists came in. Now, I don't want to dissuade any of you people from practicing communism. Heaven forbid that you should stop practicing communism at this late date in the game. But from time to time, I've got to take Bob Chapman to task, because here his observation is that you need to throw all of these people, all these bad guys, out of Congress. Well, everybody except Ron Paul. And I'm sitting here saying, hey, hang on a second. How do you tell the good guys from the bad guys? In 1 Samuel chapter 8, 1 Samuel chapter 8, way back about 1000 to 1100 B.C. This is before King David. Our forefathers came up to our chief judge, a fellow by the name of Samuel, and they said, we want a king like all the nations around us. And so Samuel went to God and he said, you know, the people want a king like all the nations around us. The people want a democracy, you know, instead of the monarchy that you've imposed upon us, God. That's what they're telling you today. What you want is a democracy instead of this crummy republic. In those days, we wanted a monarchy instead of God to rule over us. God said, he's going to take a tenth of your sheep and then you're going to be his servants. He tells you here in 1 Samuel chapter 8, there's only 22 verses. I mean, you can read this thing in 10 minutes. Write it down. 1 Samuel chapter 8. Now pay attention here, boys and girls, because you have lived to see this prophecy come to pass in George W. Bush. Well, you saw it come to pass in Franklin D. Roosevelt and Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter also. I just wanted to point out to you, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and mind your business. Because in verse 18 he says, you'll cry out to me in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you, and the Eternal will not hear you in that day. So if you want to cry out and pray to Jesus about George W. Bush, you can save your breath. Now, boys and girls, we made our bed. Now, children, it's time to sleep in it. Now, there are some solutions out here that we need to implement. But it's not going to be by voting the bad guys out of Congress. We've been listening to that crap for the last 50 years. I would submit to you that Bob doesn't know of any other solution. And so, if we don't have any other solution, I guess then that's the best solution that we can come up with. Vote the bad guys out. But you haven't voted the bad guys out in the last 50 years. What in the hell makes you think you're going to vote the bad guys out in the next 10? Or the next 2? Or the next 6 months? 98% of the incumbents are re-elected every election. Now, maybe it's not 98% every election, but it's 90%. Now, you haven't had a house cleaning since 1932. Now, there might be a house cleaning coming up, but when you vote the Democrats in, all you're going to do is to replace. You're going to replace a Republican criminal with a Democratic criminal. The hell makes you think anything's going to change? It was Bill Clinton and the Democrats that gave you NAFTA and GATT, and the Republicans that gave you CAFTA. Both parties have given you free trade and the export of your jobs to India. What in the hell makes you think that when you change from the Republicans to the Democrats or the Democrats to the Republicans that you're going to gain anything down on Main Street? Well, I say, you know, it seemed like to me it's time to start connecting some of these dots. I can't think of anything that democracy has brought us, or free trade, or voting. And I want to remind you that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is not a Democrat, and he is not running for election. And when he returns, can you imagine Jesus Christ coming back, described in the book of Revelation with power and glory, riding a white horse, and then coming to you on Main Street and pleading for your vote? Have you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy? You think the God of creation is going to come to you and say, oh, won't you please vote for me in the upcoming election so that I can save you from all of this graft and corruption from the Republicans and the Democrats? He's going to kick your ass up between your eyebrows. I don't know. If you want to go vote, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. If it makes you feel good, go vote. But it hasn't done you any good so far. And I really don't think it's going to do you much good in the next 4 or 5 years. The Fed. The Fed has found that 35% of Americans with adjustable rate mortgages do not know how much the rate could increase at one time. And 41% weren't sure of the maximum rate that they could face. 28% didn't know which index of interest rates could go or would be used to determine their adjustments, and many others gave incorrect answers, such as the CPI or the going rate. Boys and girls, wait a minute, back up. Listen to this again. Get your thinking cap on. The Federal Reserve went out and conducted a little survey, and they found that 35% of Americans, now that's a third of Americans, that's one American out of every three. These are people who vote, for crying out loud. These are people who went to school. These are people with degrees from college, for crying out loud. Pay attention now. 35% of Americans with adjustable rate mortgages do not know how much the rate could increase at one time. Oh my God. You mean to tell me that 35%, one person in three, goes out and takes a mortgage out on his house, an ARM, an adjustable rate mortgage? I don't know, boys and girls, I've been in the business world all my life. I started business at age 11 with a newspaper route. I could count and I could make change without a computer, without a calculator, when I was 11 years old. A customer could give me a $5 bill to pay a $1.25 bill and I could give him the correct change without a calculator. I just thought I'd throw that out for your consideration. Now, an adjustable rate mortgage, what that means is that you sign up for a mortgage that doesn't have a fixed interest rate. And as interest rates go up or go down, the mortgage holder at various times, spelled out in the mortgage itself, which is a contract. That's a contract. And one-third of the people that signed these contracts didn't read it because they don't know what the terms and conditions spell out for the increase in their rates. And these are people that vote. And these are the people that are going to vote the bad guys out and the good guys in. Hell, these fools can't even count! Pay attention! One-third, boys and girls, can't even count. What the hell makes you think they can read? Listen to the rest of it. 40% were not sure of the maximum rate that they could face. 35% didn't know how much the rate could increase. 40% weren't sure of the maximum rate that they could face. They don't know if their payments are going to go up 5%, 10%, 20%, 50%, or 100%. These are people that vote. These are people with college degrees, for crying out loud. Hell, I could do better than that when I was 12 years old selling newspapers. Of course, that was before we got into this insanity in the public school system where we couldn't make kids sit down, shut up, fold their hands, and learn before we started dumbing them down. 28% didn't know which index of interest rates would be used to determine their adjustments. They don't know whether it's the CPI or the BIS or the ABC or the ZYX. They haven't got a clue as to what's going to be used to make that determination. And these people are educated. Boys and girls worldwide, we Americans pride ourselves on sending every kid to school. I mean, this kid can be mentally deficient. We'll spend $250,000 educating this kid in school. Everybody in America goes to school. It's the law. Everybody in America is educated. And this is the kind of insanity that we get out of it. And Bob Chapman says what we need to do is vote the bad guys out. Come on, Bob. Come on, Bob. These people can't even count, for crying out loud. How in the hell are they going to vote the bad guys out of office? Oh, God, my adrenaline's flowing. I got to get back to something more mundane. Let's talk about lawyers again. Remember we were talking about lawyers last time? I told you about Jerry Spence. Remember that? Jerry Spence wrote a book called With Justice for None. Hell of a good book. I imagine it's still in print. It was published first in 1989 by Jerry Spence, all rights reserved. He's written a number of other books. And I suppose if you just put in the name Jerry Spence down here at Amazon.com or, you know, some bookstore and said, how many books has this guy written? He hasn't written any bad ones. I've read them all. I've got all of his books sitting on my shelf, read them all. Sometimes I read them just to be entertained. He's great entertainment. God, you're going to love him. And then on top of that, he actually tells you some of the inside stories of what the hell goes on in the legal profession. I told you about what Jesus had to say about lawyers, you know, in Luke 11:37 through 54, about lawyers and preachers. By God, if I was a lawyer or a preacher, I'd change my profession. If I was a lawyer, a banker, or a preacher, I think I'd change my profession. Now here's Jerry Spence. He says, one can no more search for justice through the entangled labyrinths of the law without a lawyer than one can trod through fearsome, uncharted jungles without a guide. There is, however, no scarcity of these sons of canon and code and daughters of order and ordinance to lead us through such perilous places. Lawyers are everywhere. They abound in our hamlets, and they swarm in our cities. They overcrowd our legislatures. They flourish as the heads of state, and like dead fish too long in the water, they rise to the top of our great corporations. Now, what is happening in America that we should provide our citizens with 2.67 lawyers per 1,000 population, while Japan needs only 0.10. Two-thirds of the lawyers on planet Earth live in the United States of America. You got that, boys and girls? Two-thirds, two lawyers out of every three on this planet live in the United States of America, which has 6% of the world's population, by the way. While we account for only 6% of the world's population, we've got two-thirds of the lawyers. In our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., there is one lawyer for every 60 people. There were 355,000 lawyers in the United States in 1970. Between 1970 and 75, admissions to the bar increased by a staggering 91%. And today, 40,000 additional lawyers are being produced every year in our universities. And already, there are over 675,000 lawyers in the country, and at the current rate, there will be over 1 million lawyers by the middle of the next decade. Now, why is the proliferation of these legalistic creatures in a society that has rarely embraced them? The abhorrence of the profession is documented throughout Anglo-Saxon history. Shakespeare's Dick the Butcher in King Henry VI exclaimed, The first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers. Dickens wrote, if there were no bad people, there would be no good lawyers. Poor Richard, in his almanac, said, God works wonders now and then. Behold, a lawyer, an honest man. So scorned were lawyers by the colonists that they were depicted as lawyer birds with their long bills and lawyer fish, always slippery. Both Massachusetts and Rhode Island prohibited lawyers from serving in their colonial assemblies. Brigham Young, upon establishing his utopia in the Utah desert, characterized lawyers as a stink in the nostrils of every latter-day saint. And he described the courtroom as a cage of unclean birds, a den and a kitchen of the devil. But there's no shortage of Mormon lawyers today. Well, early in the 19th century, the Baptist preacher John Leyland attacked a host of lawyers who infest our land like the swarms of locusts in Egypt that eat up every green thing. Even in Riverton, Wyoming, the uncelebrated genesis of my legal career, the townsfolk spoke disparagingly of the profession. I remember once hearing Emmett Osborne of Osborne Shoes talk about lawyers at the morning coffee clatch. He said, a lawyer is like a fly in a dog's ear. He said, it makes a man go plumb crazy. Well, of course, all young men and women do not depart our law schools with the intent of trying cases. Some recognize that they are not suited for this sort of combat, and they have resolved to engage in an office practice similar to the doctor, who never intends to grasp a scalpel. Still, even the radiologist or the rheumatologist first takes an internship and then a residency in a teaching hospital under the supervision of clinical experts and sees literally thousands of patients before he actually ventures out on his own. But most of the training of young lawyers in this country has been entrusted to professors who have never actually engaged in the practice of law, or if they have, they have abandoned the legal practice after a short and usually disillusioning exposure for the more sedate life within the university, teaching law in the law schools instead of practicing law out on the streets. Now, if the students intend to become experts in, let's say, contract law, they will likely be taught contracts by a professor who has never sat across the desk from a living client, who has never considered the grave, long-lasting personal and social consequences of the agreement that he is entrusted to write. Generally, the students will never draft a contract themselves, nor are these law students likely ever to see one of these contracts in law school. And should they open individual offices on their own, which today is very rare, some legal publishing company will send one of its salesmen around to sell them on easy monthly installments a set of form books containing contracts that other lawyers have drafted, contracts that neophytes can copy, and afterward then present to their clients as though they had written every word, along with a fee commensurate with their authorship. Now, Jerry Spence goes on to say that I have taught young trial lawyers from across this country for many years in various trial seminars, and to my dismay, I find that most of these lawyers do not know how to conduct the simplest cross-examination, or how to get an exhibit into evidence, or to impeach a witness with a prior inconsistent statement. And these are skills that are equivalent to a doctor being able to take a patient's blood pressure or to examine his tonsils. And yet these lawyers, without the most rudimentary tools, are thrown into every kind of trial, from wrongful death suits for widows and children to the defense of capital murder cases for the accused. Now, boys and girls, are you paying attention? Because this is the guy that you're going to hire. This is the guy that you're going to pay $6,000 a year to have him on retainer. This is the guy that you're going to give $5,000 to. You're going to walk into this lawyer's office, put $5,000 on the counter. And what are you going to get for your money? Well, if this student's average, if he's normal, and let's say he's going to write a contract, he will have been taught contracts by a professor who has never sat across from a living client and who has never considered the grave, long-lasting personal and social consequences of the agreement that he is about to write. And this is the guy you're going to hire. That's the guy that I hired. That's the guy that I paid $6,000 a year to. That's the guy that I paid $5,000 up front to. That's the guy that I paid $60,000 to lose three cases. I would submit to you, boys and girls, that had I argued six cases with my lawyer Bickle, he would have lost six out of six rather than three out of three. I mean, after all, statistically, he's going to lose 94% of the time. 94% of the time in a criminal case, your lawyer is going to lose. Statistically, this is the guy that you're going to hire. People go call the law school here and they'll say, well, I've got this problem over here, Mr. Gordon, and I need your advice. Let me remind you that this is a law school. I'm not a whore. Don't call me for legal advice. I don't give legal advice. First of all, it's against the law. I can't give legal advice. Half the people I call here, they're not people looking for legal advice. They're undercover government agents seeking something out of my mouth by which they can condemn me. But then the other half are actually seeking legal advice out of ignorance because they say, well, I can't trust my lawyers, and I hear you, Mr. Gordon, and so I want you to advise me. Why don't you educate yourself and advise yourself? I mean, if you're a plumber, do you go down here to some plumber and say, give me some plumbing advice? What the hell does a plumber need plumbing advice for? If he's a plumber, he's a plumber. He doesn't need plumbing advice. Does he? A plumber, boys and girls, that has to go to a plumber to get plumbing advice ain't a plumber. Can you connect those dots? A lawyer that has to hire a lawyer to defend himself in court ain't a lawyer, or he wouldn't need to hire a lawyer, would he? My God, boys and girls, does a carpenter go to a carpenter to get carpentry advice? Have we taken leave of our senses in this country? Is there no common sense left? Are we all insane? You got to hire a lawyer. You got to hire a good lawyer. Boys and girls, unless you were a good lawyer, you wouldn't know what the hell a good lawyer looked like. How can a plumber hire a lawyer? He doesn't know anything about the law. He doesn't know what a good lawyer is. Now, boys and girls, I'm a plumber. Sewage runs downhill and paydays on Friday. Those are the two most important criteria for the education of a plumber. Sewage runs downhill. Payday is on Friday. Now, I don't need to go hire a plumber. I am a plumber. I'm a plumber. I'm a tradesman. I'm a plumber. I don't call a plumber to do my plumbing. And I'm also a lawyer, and I don't need to hire a lawyer to represent me in court. Now, I think I could go pick a good lawyer. Jerry Spence is a good lawyer. But I'm going to show you that when you hire a lawyer, you hire some unexpected problems, because when you hire a lawyer, you declare yourself to be legally incompetent and unable to manage your own legal affairs. Do you remember what I told you in the last program? I said in open court, well, I've got some questions for this witness. And the judge practically jumped across the bench and said, Gordon, you're out of control. You're out of order. And I'm going to hold you in contempt of court. Well, the judge was right. You see, when I hired Bickle, I declared myself to be a legal incompetent. Legally incompetent, unable to manage my legal affairs. And then when I opened my big mouth, after having declared myself to be legally incompetent and unable to manage my legal affairs, I jump up and say, I've got some questions. Come on, Gordon, let's wake up and smell the coffee. He said, your lawyer, Mr. Bickle, will direct your case. Well, that's exactly correct. And when you hire an attorney, your attorney will direct your case, for better or for worse. And, of course, your job as a plumber, carpenter, or an electrician is to select a good lawyer. Now, how in the hell are you going to select a good lawyer? Here's a lawyer, the best in the business, if Jerry Spence is not the best lawyer in America. He's in the top 100. I'd say he's probably in the top 10. He sure as hell in the top 100. And he's telling you here, Listen to this. If the students intend to become experts in, say, contract law, they will likely be taught contracts by a professor who has never sat across the table from a living client and has never considered the grave, long-lasting personal and social consequences of the agreement that is to write. Bickle wrote my contracts for me, and then when he went in to defend them, he lost them. Generally, the students will never draft a contract themselves, nor likely ever see one in law school. A student's going to go through law school, never draft a contract, and never see one. And you're going to hire this guy to write your contract? Okay, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, but it gets worse as we progress along, and I'll tell you more about that after I give you a couple of reminders. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Jerry Spence, one of the top lawyers in America, has written a number of books. I recommend his books. All you got to do is, here's his first one here that I read, called With Justice for None. What an apt title. Hire a lawyer and get no justice at all. With Justice for None, Destroying an American Myth by Jerry Spence. He's written 5 or 6 books. Just ask for Spence's books and buy them all. They're all worth reading. They're all very educational, whether you're a lawyer or not. Now listen to this. A guy by the name of James Nielsen, he's cited now by Jerry Spence in his book. He says, James Nielsen, a professor at the Hastings Law School, said, quote, "It is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the 4th largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed." He said it's worse than that. "It is a fact that most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without ever having set foot in the courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel, and a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, it is a cruel hoax." Cruel hoax. This is a law school professor, for crying out loud. Hastings Law School, the 4th largest law school in America. Boys and girls, 4th largest law school in America. Here's what you're hiring. When you go in and hire a lawyer, you put your $5,000 on the counter. You place your confidence in this lawyer, Who is going to represent you? Who is going to take your power of attorney? After you've declared yourself to be legally incompetent. When you hire an attorney, you declare yourself to be legally incompetent and you walk into court in a guardian-ward relationship. Your lawyer is your guardian. Did you know that? Did you want to divorce yourself from legal capacity and hire this guy and give him your power of attorney to act for you? Yeah, most people want to do that. Well, most people need to do that because they are, in fact, legally incompetent. I was legally incompetent. I couldn't represent myself. I was dumb. I was ignorant. So I hired a lawyer. I hired a guardian. And my guardian was an entrepreneur. He was working for himself. He was making money off of me. I would have liked it a lot better if he'd have gone in there and represented me, but he couldn't represent me. He couldn't. He didn't know how. He went to law school. Maybe he wanted to. I'm not ascribing any bad motives or wicked intent to my lawyer, Bickle. I'm sure that he meant well and he wanted to win. Jerry Spitz pointed that out. He said, you know, I've conducted trial seminars all over the country. And these young lawyers, they come in, they're unable to conduct a simple cross-examination. He likens lawyers to doctors and says, you know, at least a doctor, when he goes to school, he spends 7 years in school and 2 years in an internship. He actually goes out and practices his craft under a tutor. A medical intern working in a hospital. He's been to medical school. He's got all of the academic knowledge. He's scored all of the A's, B's, and C's that he's going to get on his tests. Now he's out in the real world. He's actually practicing medicine. But he's doing it in a hospital under the supervision of older heads, you know, older people who have been doing this for many years. You know, we do that in the crafts, in the trades. We don't send a guy to plumber school and then turn him out on the job and say, here, go plumb this in. We put him out there as an apprentice plumber. He lights cigarettes and pours coffee for the journeyman plumber who works for the plumbing contractor who's called a master. That's the way we do it in the trades. We don't just turn electricians out there because they've got some academic knowledge, because they scored straight A's on their tests, and say, hey, go wire this in, for crying out loud. We do that with lawyers. They go to law school and they score well on their academics and then they go out to practice law. And as the old adage goes, they couldn't find their hind ends at high noon with a road map. That's the bottom line. And Jerry Spence is just telling you that along with this guy James Nielsen. Listen to this. Here's Nielsen again. Here's the college professor. He says it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading. This guy is your lawyer, and he's never written a pleading. Well, he's got to write his first one, so I guess he's going to write his first pleading for you. Jerry Spence said he owed the people a lot. He just stacked up the dead bodies. That's what he said. He said, I just kept trying cases. I kept piling up the dead bodies until I finally learned how. That's on-the-job training. Did you want a lawyer who's on-the-job training and he's using you as the guinea pig? I guess that's the price we pay for good lawyers. For the 10% that are good lawyers, I guess that's the price we pay. Now, let me tell you how to hire a good lawyer. You walk into the lawyer's office, and when he wants $5,000 up front, he's incompetent. How do I know that? Because Jerry Spence wants $100,000 up front, and he's competent. So if you can't afford the $100,000 when you walk in the door, you can't buy competent legal advice. That's why there's a lawyer, you know, in Washington, D.C., for every 60 people. The competent lawyers are in Washington, D.C. Those are lobbyists. like Baker and Botts down in Houston. Those are competent lawyers. And they work for millions and millions of dollars. Hillary Clinton is a competent lawyer. Hillary Clinton, the last year she worked at the Rose Law Firm, made $500,000. $537,000, I think, was the number. You know, when you're making $500,000 a year, you know you're not some kind of a schmuck. You know, you got to know your business. Lawyers that are charging $5,000, you know, doing cases over here in the courthouse. Lawyers that are working for $150 an hour, those are the guys at the bottom of the barrel. Let me tell you, if you graduate from law school, this is a few years back now, but if you're graduating from law school in the top half of your class, you're starting at $84,000 a year. You start at $84,000 a year anywhere in America. The guy that's practicing law down the street, you know, the guy that you walk into, knock on his door, this guy's in the bottom half of his class, and James Nielsen, the law professor, said this guy has never written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed, and you're going to walk in and hire this schmuck to work for you? Now, they come out of law school and they go to work in the prosecutor's office or the public defender's office. That's the bottom half of the law school graduating class. And you've got all these lawyers graduating from law school and they got to generate business. And that's why we have so much litigation here in America. I mean, after all, the more lawyers that you graduate, the more trouble you're going to have, because lawyers make their money off of trouble. If there wasn't any trouble, there wouldn't be any lawyer business. I got to tell you a little story here. I was getting divorced one time, you know, years and years ago. My wife got tired of me, and she said, I've had enough of this crap. I'm going to divorce you. And so she hired a lawyer. Now, I had a deal worked out with her. We were going to have a friendly divorce. Friendly divorce. That's like a virgin whore. It's an oxymoron. There aren't any virgin whores, and there aren't any friendly divorces. But I was looking for that virgin whore, and so I suggested to my ex-wife that we have a friendly divorce, and she didn't think that was a good idea, so she hired a lawyer. The lawyer went out and got a restraining order against me. What did he need a restraining order against me for? I wasn't threatening her. We were trying to have a friendly divorce. Because you got to have trouble. You got to have strife. You got to have hate and animosity. Because that's where the money's at. Lawyers make their money off of hate, contempt, evil, wickedness. Just like doctors make their money off of sickness, disease, and plague. Boys and girls, if there's no sickness, there's no need for a doctor. If there's no strife, there's no need for a lawyer. Lawyers are out kicking up strife, hate, and discontent because it's a part and parcel with business. It's nothing personal. It's just business. That's why doctors are out stirring up more disease. Because if there's no disease, there's no business. If there's no business, there's no money. If there's no money, there's no way to pay the boat payments and the house payments and the car payments. So let's wake up to reality and let's start connecting the dots. Now, doctors are entrepreneurs, and they sell drugs. And the last thing a doctor wants is for some non-union scab to be selling drugs down on the street corner. Now, Americans are really opposed to illegal drugs. Americans are all in favor of legal drugs. If it comes from Oscobetri or it comes from Rexall, it's okay. And these legal drugs kill 130,000 people a year. It's called iatrogenic disease. That's what they admit to. It's really double or triple or quadruple that, but, you know, what the hell. Let's just stick with the official numbers. The official numbers are, our government tells us, that doctors kill 130,000 people a year with legal prescription drugs. Now, the scabs, that's these dirty recreational drug dealers, that's this no-good, low-account drug pusher down on the street corner over here selling cocaine and ecstasy and meth. They kill 6,000 people a year. How many times is that? Let's put 130 in here. Divide that by 6. Medical doctors kill 21 times more people than do the illegal drug pushers down on the street corner. Nobody's opposed to that. Everybody loves it. Okay. Well, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, but if you are trying to save lives, it would seem like to me you should close down the doctors and the prescription drugs and the Pfizers and Mercks and the Smith Kleins and so on, and go with the illegal drug dealers. They kill fewer people and make them feel a lot better. I've never heard of anybody complaining about how they were feeling after they took those drugs from that guy down on the street corner. My old Aunt Bessie was taking prescription drugs that she was getting from her doctor, and she did nothing but piss and moan the last 20 years of her life, always complaining about how bad she felt. I always told her, I said, you know, if you'd quit taking those prescription drugs and go down here to Joe the drug dealer on the corner, he'd probably make you feel a lot better. At least all the people that I've ever talked to that were taking drugs from Joe on the street corner, they never complained about the quality of the drugs. They always say how good it makes them feel. And all the people that are taking drugs from the doctors and the druggists tell me about how bad they feel all the time. I mean, boys and girls, you don't have to be real smart. We ain't talking rocket science here. If you want to feel good, you go to the drug dealer that's selling cocaine and heroin. You want to feel bad, you go to the drug dealer who's selling Vioxx or something else that's going to give you a heart attack and kill you. And that choice is yours. Same thing with law. If you want to hire the best possible lawyer that money can buy, you are it. You're the guy. And I'll tell you why you're the guy. The best lawyer that money can buy is the lawyer who's going to go to jail if he loses the case. Boy, that's a lawyer that is going to work his heart out. You know, if your doctor is treating you for cancer, and if he fails and you die, the penalty is death, and we're going to take him out and stone him to death because he misrepresented himself to you, calling himself a healer, you'd have either a lot better doctors or you'd have a lot fewer doctors, one or the other. I'll guarantee you. And in the Bible, you know, God says, I'm your healer. That's in Exodus 15:26, and you got a lot of guys running around here claiming that they can heal you, but then when you ask them, well, can you cure cancer? They say, no, we can't cure cancer. Can you tell us what causes cancer? No, we don't know what causes it either. My God, if you went to your mechanic and you said, do you know what's wrong with my car? No, I don't know what's wrong with your car. Well, can you fix it? No, I can't fix it, but for $25 an hour I can work on it until you go broke. By God, I'll guarantee you wouldn't go to that mechanic. But you go to the lawyers and the doctors. And you pay them a lot more than $25 an hour. And they can't solve your legal problems, and they can't cure your cancer, and they don't know what causes the legal problem, and they don't know what the solution is. And that's why our Chief Justice said 90% of them were incompetent. So why in the hell would you want to go hire one? You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about lawyers. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.